Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Joining us is a Professor Barry Shoup. He's the chair of the Ministerial Advisory Committee on COVID vaccines. Good morning. How are you doing?
Good morning, Howard. I'm very well. How are you doing?
Excellent. Thank you. So that was very, very welcome news. I imagine that the booster shot is now available.
It'll be about to be available. I think what's happened is that the regulatory authority, SAHPRA, South African Health Product Regulatory Authority, that's what it stands for, they've okayed it. It's gone through the loops and their examination, their evaluation, their review and so on, and they've given a rubber stamp. So now it's fine, but it's less to go through the Department of Health for them to actually do the implementation.
Right.
But I imagine that's going to come very soon. I'm sure by next week, in fact, it'll be available. It's not immediately available.
The EVDS system has proven to be, I think, quite successful. It has been adaptable. It seems to be that whenever there's a change, it doesn't take long for it to adapt to the demand.
Yeah, I think it'll go pretty streamlined. But it's been a great help, I think, and it's quite a challenge, you know, managing it, because it goes all the way from when the vaccine vials arrive in the country to the storage, the distribution, to how it's used, to what's over, in terms of how many, even what there is obviously a certain percentage of wastage, all that kind of thing is on the EVDS system. So it's quite a large database.
You know, we were talking a little bit earlier and people saying difficult year, obviously 2021 it has been. But if we look back last year in 2020, this time of year, we were starting to see Israel vaccinating. There was no real clear plan as to when we were going to get our vaccines. There were a whole lot of talks that were given even about March, April. Now that's off to the medical teams that already started. And the idea was, even the concern was, that it would only be almost in 2022 that younger people would be able to get vaccines. It's actually been a remarkable achievement as to how this has gone. Certainly a lot better than was anticipated.
Yeah, no, it has. You're absolutely correct. You know, when you think back early this year, there was like a global, a frenzied rush for a limited amount of vaccine. We're now in South Africa in the position that we've got adequate vaccine stores. Our problem is just getting it into people's arms. But the vaccine stores are there. And we weren't in that position at the beginning of the year, as you say. Absolutely.
No, it has. So I do think it's important to be able to look back at that and say, you know, to look at what we've achieved and how much better a position we are in today.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think we are much, much better. And I think it has gone reasonably well in spite of quite formidable challenges. And a lot of it, you know, is not apparent to the general public, you know, what goes on behind the scenes.
Well, absolutely, and there's a huge expectation, even on the EVDS system. That could have been a disaster, but it's worked very well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, it's been a great achievement, I must say.
In terms of the research, in terms of what you see, what you recommend with regard to booster shots, let's just go through that, because we get a lot of questions around, well, I've had the two Pfizers, when, how long should I wait before getting the next, what's the ideal time, etc. Take us through that.
Okay. The ideal time in terms of getting the best immune response, the best protective immune response, in fact, it's actually the longer you wait, the better. But obviously you can't wait too long, because then you make yourself vulnerable to infection. So 6 months is an ideal time in terms of it not being too long. In other words, you're not waiting too long to get the booster, but you're getting a very good immune response. But there are certain circumstances where we want to actually reduce that time, and that's where people are vulnerable. And that would be, for example, people whose immune systems aren't great. Then we want to get them, get a booster shot to try and, you know, jack up that immune system as soon as possible. That's the one possibility. The other, one group. The other group are people that are vulnerable, for example, the elderly, particularly those living in the old age homes and the care homes and so on. They are very vulnerable to outbreaks, and the outbreaks there can be very serious. So we're trying to make there, in that situation, make it a bit earlier, even as early as 4 months. Because it's really a balance. You want to kind of protect them as soon as possible, and still get a reasonable immune response.
In terms of the kids 12 to 18, if I'm not mistaken, they're now allowed to get their second shot as well, or will be allowed to get their second shot.
They will be very soon, probably next week, I think, from next week, yes. Yeah.
And you'd recommend that as well?
Absolutely. Now, the first dose is what we call a priming dose, which gives quite a good protection, but you really want to optimize on that and get the booster to make it, you know, really as good as possible.
And what is the waiting period for that between your first and your second dose?
Well, the Pfizer, it's 6 weeks. In the UK, they actually make it even longer. The UK use 12 weeks. United States and Israel, I think it's only 3 weeks. But I think 6 weeks is a good kind of compromise between optimizing the immune response and yet not making them, not waiting too long while they could be susceptible to getting infected. So 6 weeks is our optimal time.
Right. So if you do have a teenager, 12 to 18, if it is 6 weeks, as soon as it's available, please go and get them covered. I know it's a very vulnerable age, and it's a vulnerable age because they are out and about sort of a lot more than we are.
Yeah.
Ansan says if your 17-year-old had a vaccine a week later, got COVID later after that, how long should they wait for a booster?
Yeah, I think after COVID, we would normally kind of say wait about a month. And the reason for that is that, when you get COVID, the reason why you're feeling lousy, why you're feeling sick, is that there's all these kind of chemical mediators, which are part, in fact, of the immune response, which make you feel not so great. So we want those to kind of die down before you give the vaccine, which itself stimulates those chemical mediators. And that's why we would advise, wait a month. The reason really is that you want to avoid the kind of side effects of both the illness and the vaccine. You don't want to kind of add them up together.
Right. And Marcel asking, if one had the J&J, but not on the Sasanke trial, can one have a Pfizer booster?
Yeah, that's I was hoping nobody would ask that question.
Because, really, Marcel, why did you go and ask the question?
Yeah, Marcel, you shouldn't have asked that question. There's no regulatory approval for what you call heterologous boosting. In other words, using two different vaccines. At the moment, it's just a homologous for Pfizer. We're trying to push through the homologous for J&J. In other words, as the healthcare workers on Sasaki did, get another J&J for the people that got the initial J&J. And there's quite a lot. There must be about 4 million people in that. So there is a problem. It's a problem we're trying to kind of push through as much as we can. But, the problem with all these, is you've got to go through regulatory authorities and this committee and that committee. That's the problem.
So, Marcel, just hang in there, and hopefully you're not alone. There's 4 million people in a similar position.
But what I can say in terms of reassurance is that Johnson & Johnson vaccine gives pretty good coverage, even well past 6 months. They've measured it up. They've done studies at Harvard showing good retained immunity. Wow, we're past up to about 280 days, or what's it, up to 9 months. So don't be too worried. But look, with everybody else, we are seeing breakthrough infections with all the vaccines. So, still be careful, but don't be too kind of concerned.
Right. And Peter wants to know, are the side effects worse for a booster shot than after the first two? What are you seeing?
No, I don't think so. There's individual sensitivities. Some people do, some people don't. Some after the first, some after the second, some after the boosters. It's just really individual sensitivity to that, what I mentioned, those chemical mediators in the body.
Right. In terms of Omicron, there was some research or some information that came out yesterday, which although said it's too early to tell, it had a lot of positive news in it, which always makes me a little bit nervous. I mean, I want to be positive, but I'm scared it changes our behavior. What are we seeing in terms of Omicron severity, reactions, spread, etc.?
Yeah, I'm very glad you brought that up, Hal, because I think that there may well be a wrong message going out to the community. We still have a serious problem. There are people in hospital. There are people in ICU. Unfortunately, there were a few people that have died. That hasn't disappeared. What we are seeing, because a lot of people are being vaccinated, and there's a lot of immunity, both natural as well as from the vaccine, that overall we are seeing fewer serious cases. And those that are breakthroughs, and there's a lot of breakthroughs because this particular virus is very prone to what we call vaccine escape, escape from immunity. And those cases, the vaccine escape people, those have been pretty mild on the whole. But again, we've seen some vaccine escape which are serious. So I think the message should not be misinterpreted that we now got a trivial disease. We don't. It hasn't.
Because a lot of the discussion and the language that I'm hearing anecdotally is that, well, you know, if it's only like a flu, then why are we bothering? Because let's just get this flu and move on with our lives.
Yeah. Now the problem is this, that first of all, it can be serious and there are people that have been administered to hospital on oxygen, et cetera, et cetera. Then there are also some long-term side effects, long-term, what we call, long COVID. Which can go on for quite a long period of time. So it's not a trivial disease. It's not like flu. It does have some more sinister connotations. And I think people must still be careful. I know it's been a long time. It's been 2 years, but we still do need to maintain, in addition to the vaccination, which is so important, the other preventive measures as well. I think it's so important to get that message and not to trivialize it. And unfortunately, there are some people who are misinterpreting the message.
And the thought that, well, this is the virus burning itself out. Can we know that?
Absolutely not. There's no virological evidence of that whatsoever. In fact, the opposite may well be true. We've got so many mutations, and many of the mutations we've identified as being sinister mutations. We cannot say that the virus is burning itself out. There's no evidence of that whatsoever. The reason why we're seeing more mild cases is because of the vaccination, because of the immunity, not the virus.
I think that's an important, message. It's not a message necessarily we all want to hear, but it is an important one. And nevertheless, just to bring some balance to that, not obviously to panic or to become hysterical about it, but really just to make sure that you don't, that we don't, in our own minds write this off as though this is a thing of the past and do away with all of our measures.
Yeah, no, Will's excellently said, fantastic. A great message, Charles.
Thank you. And Professor Barry Shoup, thank you for all your reporting and all the work that you've done. I will be back in a studio next year. But just from me to you, thank you for all your incredible work. It is 8:30. Yeah.
Thanks.
I'm Howard Feldman. This is Your Morning Mayhem. It's 101.9 High FM.